listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We had to start a little bit late to get all of the music that we're going to play for you tonight, but we'd like to welcome you to another show with another bassist. We're going to keep giving you bass to the face, Mr. Murphy Smith. How are you, Murphy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. So I know very little about you, but let's start with the question that I ask every guest. Where did you get first influenced by music, and what was the moment of Zen that made you want to be a musician?
So, short answer, my dad. My dad is a hobbyist musician. He had a day job printing food labels, but he's a very creative songwriter, great guitar player.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyone who's been in our basement, and I'm from Kansas City, anyone who's been in our basement in Kansas City, knows we just have this great studio. There's an upright bass there. Yeah. Piano, drums, bass, guitar, everything.
Who was he influenced by? Like, who were his favorite songwriters?
So, Elvis Costello, Frank Zappa, Motown, the Beatles. And he had some stuff that I just love. And he makes stuff now too, but in the 80s, he had this stuff that he made. And it was like a mix of like Elvis Costello, Zappa, and Motown.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. All on like a 4-track tape recorder in his living room. Perfect.
You know what never surprises me is like how creative and how artistic so many people are around the world. And it just like, this is one of the reasons I started this show. It's because I got tired of just like having this one little filter of whatever some record executive thinks is happening when that is not music to me. It's like, what is music is, you know, any neighborhood, you see jam sessions and you hear, I mean, I'm always seeing music all the time. And that's one of the reasons what I love about music. So it's like, kudos to your dad for, you know, just being a songwriter and creating this environment for you to thrive in. Did you guys ever jam together? Did you guys work on music together?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we still do. And I live in Minneapolis now, but he'll like write a song and he'll go, hey, I need some bass on it. So I just record. That's my my bass recording corner.
That's so I awesome. Just
go into a little alcove, I record some bass for him, send it to him. So yeah, it's great. And every time I'm back home, we play. He bought a guitar that just lives in my apartment so that whenever they come up to Minneapolis, we can play.
That's amazing. And what made you move from Kansas City to Minneapolis?
So my girlfriend's doing law school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you love the funk because that is the city of funk for sure.
Oh yeah, where's got a Prince thingy.
Oh, let me see it, Dilly. Oh, yeah. Awesome! You know, have you done the Paisley Park tour yet?
I did. It was awesome,
man. Amazing, right? Like, just, you know, I have a couple friends from Minneapolis. You know, not to go on a tangent, but and they're all amazing musicians. One in particular, his name's Jason Johnson, and he used to go to Paisley Park to see Prince play there, just like random concerts all the time. And he would tell me about this, and I'm like, this is insane. Like, he said, man, I'd be eating a sandwich in a cafe, and a bunch of guys in suits would come up in sunglasses, and they'd be like, hey, we want to let you know the artist is playing today. And they would just like hand out flyers. And he said he would go to Paisley Park. You'll love this story, because I'm a huge Prince fan, and obviously you are too. And he said they would wait, they'd get there around 8 or 9 o'clock, and they'd wait for about an hour, and then all of a sudden the gates would open. They'd let everybody into this like club party, which, you know, because you've seen the club, and there would just be a table with 2 liters of soda and pretzels. And everybody would just drink soda and eat pretzels, then around midnight, Prince would come on and play the most insane, like, funk, like unreleased stuff, and they would play it till about 4 or 5 in the morning, and then he'd be like, "All right, I'm done," and he would leave, and everybody would walk out, and the sun would just be coming up.
Right.
It's just crazy. It's just it's so crazy. So you're in the town of the funk, and you know, it's just, I have so much love for that city, the Twin Cities, but really that place where all that music thrived, First Avenue, all those. Amazing. Have you played there by chance?
I have not gotten to play there. You know Bunkers?
No.
Oh man, Bunkers is this. So hello, can you hear me? Yeah. So Bunkers is this old spot from the 70s, and if I'm correct. And there's this group called Dr. Mambo's Combo. It's like house band kind of. And they play every Sunday, used to be Sunday and Monday, and they just play all the best little like soul, R&B, funk stuff. And the band is just, that's where Prince used to scout for his band.
Wow.
And people, there's still like Sonny T, who plays with Corey Wong now, who is a good friend of Prince. You knew him from way back.
He and I were just texting 5 minutes ago.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. And you know what? I had the keyboardist for The Revolution. He was a guest on the show. So he was telling me all these like crazy stories about getting together with Prince early on and like how that all came about. So it's just like, I mean, that city just is amazing because of how many outlets it has for creators. So you made a good choice. You made a good choice going to Minneapolis. Now, yeah. Tell me about like how you kind of started playing and what made you pick up the bass and what made you kind of gravitate towards it. Because it is, you know, I had Victor Wooten on last week and I was telling him, I'm like, when I learned about music, I learned about it from bass players. And it made me realize that bass is the most important instrument in a band. It is the only instrument that is groove and rhythm and melody. I mean, it's chordal, you know, at the same time. So it's the only part of the rhythm section that does both. So it really is the most important instrument in a band. But tell me what made you gravitate towards it.
Yeah. No, all of that stuff. So, I mean, it's I would say it's a theory, but I feel like it's more of a law at this point. I feel like no bass player is somebody who just, when they were a kid, they go, I'm going to play bass. Very rarely. It's always out of necessity. It's like the two big ways. It's either you start playing electric because you have some friends who are starting a band and they go, we don't have a bass player. And either you're a guitar player and they say, you're going to play bass now, or you just didn't play anything and they say you're going to play bass now.
Right.
Or with upright, which is what my degree was in, is that they'll say, you play cello in orchestra in eighth grade. And then they say, we need bass players. You play bass now.
Right.
And so I was, the thing was, in third grade, I had guitar lessons. And I had, one summer my parents were like, okay, well, you have to pick between continuing your guitar lessons, not with my dad, it's a different guy, or continuing playing Little League baseball. So obviously, I picked Little League.
Wow! Really? You're like, I'm a kid. I'm going to play baseball.
Player
right,
I am today.
Right, right.
So then I stopped that. But then my dad, having all this stuff in the basement, he was just like, well, if you want to learn how to play something, I can show. He has a great ear and everything. He was like, well, if you want to learn how to play something, just tell me a song you want to learn and we can learn it. So then the first thing he showed me was Sunshine of Your Love by Cream.
Oh man, good choice, dude.
Stellar. Wow.
Okay.
Stellar. So, and then the second thing was Cold Sweat by James Brown.
Nice.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Like, man, I'm loving this. And he was teaching you on the bass.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you had you been playing cello or any of that before? Or you were just like, I'm just going to pick this up.
A little guitar, but hardly any. It was pretty much just straight into that. And then I did that for a long time and I kind of played a bit. Seventh grade, I started taking piano lessons.
Hmm.
And I took piano through high school and they were kind of more music theory than they were piano, but it was great because he was this great teacher who knew that I was going to be a bass player.
Right.
So he was making it about music theory. He was great about showing me things that I wanted to get into. Right, so many music teachers are like, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to play.
Well, he was probably showing you inversions and like how you can control what's major, what's minor, what's like gonna sound the, you know, the most hip. It's like, yeah, it's all, I mean, the bass player really can change any chord. I mean, you have a lot of responsibility, but you also have a lot of control, because I could play a chord and you could change the bass note and it's a jazz chord all of a sudden with like nines and 13s, or it's just a triad. You know what I mean? So
yes,
it's so crazy how that works. And I find it super fascinating. Do you find it overwhelming as a player that you always have options, or do you kind of like throw away all the theory and you just want to hear something that grooves?
That's a good question. I feel like it depends on the context for me. Like, and there are some bands where I will know that, because, you know, I gig a lot. That's right. Like kind of my main income at the moment. And I'll gig a lot and I'll know that some bands are like, we want you to play this, period. And that is what you play. And then there are other gigs where I know I can kind of stretch out. There are, do a lot of wedding gigs, and depending on who I'm playing with that band, I know I can kind of, it's great because the players are great. And I know that we can go into some different things, like kind of go into like a gospel shout thing on Ain't Too Proud to Beg, or like go into like different little stuff. And I really like it too. I like having options, and I like knowing that I can affect it in a different way. You know, sometimes instead of ending on the one, I'll end on relative minor. So it's like, especially at the end of a song, it's just like, ooh, it's actually sad.
Gotcha. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's so funny. It's like sometimes bass players will make it sound hip, and then sometimes any players can make it sound too hip, where it's like, oh, this is super out. But I always love when the experimentation is there, because that's when you hear like what people are hearing and feeling. And it's kind of that openness to whatever you're playing when it does venture into some jazz section or funk section or gospel section, whatever it is, it changes everybody and the color in the room. And it's so crazy. If like some people won't notice it, but every player notices it. And that's what I love about musicians. It's like any little change, it affects every single person. Yeah, exactly. You get the eye contact or the giggles. Like, those are my favorite moments on stage. It's like when you're playing and then somebody does something to change the game, and everybody kind of like pivots with whoever the player is. And it's usually the bass player, because they're in control so much. So that's amazing. Did you ever get bored playing James Brown when you learned Cold Sweat?
When I was there, no. I mean, honestly, I was like 10, and I was just trying to make sure I was still playing the right notes at that point. I was just like, this is cool, but if I play it up a fret, it sounds bad, so I shouldn't do that. That was like my main goal. It's like, as long as I just play the right notes. And then like he showed me like Help and the Beatles and all this other stuff. And that was the other cool thing, is that I was super into New Orleans style piano playing. So that was the thing that piano teacher showed me. And I lived in New Orleans for a year and a half before this.
Wow. Well. Wow.
So I've always loved that. It's like my favorite place. It's great. And so that was the other thing, that piano teacher really was great about showing me that. And he would make me, he'd make me like mix CDs of, I didn't have Spotify at the time, obviously.
Right.
So
right.
He made me like a Ray Charles mixtape, and like a gospel piano thing, and like he was the one who showed me Jaco Pastorius.
Wow.
And so all that stuff, he was just great about, and it was cool, cause you could tell he was genuinely into it. He was just like, oh, check this out, this is great, you got to know about this.
Well, and it's like a lot of players your age don't have that exposure or that kind of like finger on the pulse of what's happening like that. You know what I mean? So what's really neat about that is, what I love is when young players know those people, because there are a lot of people like that are, you know, young musicians like yourself, and they don't know these players that to me were like pillars of music, you know? So I love that you have that exposure and you know all these players. Thank God your dad's a musician, because you may have not gotten some of these names in the same way, or getting that, you know, getting that inspiration so young. Cause like Ray Charles, he falls on deaf ears to people. And what's so crazy is I did a song on my latest record, and it's like an ode to Ray Charles.
Nice.
And what's so crazy is we were, as a band, we're just talking about this. Every time we play it, everybody just gets off their seat and starts dancing. And I'm like, dude, this is like a reaction to Ray Charles. It's so amazing because he's the one that made that sound. So when you first started hearing these sounds, and I'm just curious as an older musician, what did you think when you first heard these sounds as you were kind of discovering and exploring music?
Yeah, that's a good question. You mean like the gospel and the Ray Charles and all the...
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, it's that type of thing where I feel like with music, there's a certain nature versus nurture. It's like, how much is it that we're just instinctively attracted to musically, and how much is it because we've grown up with it? Obviously, like I said, I remember like one of the earliest things I remember my dad playing for me, that's got to be some of it. But I it's just the type of thing, like, it just felt so emotional in a good, like, it just felt so genuine and just so soulful in a way that it's just like everything about it. Not just obviously the singing too,
right?
But just there's so much feeling in that.
Well, I have a cool story to tell you. So, like, when I was 11 years old, I got this amazing opportunity to sing at the Grammys, and I sang backup for a group from England called Mike and the Mechanics. But that was cool. But what was one of the coolest things I'll never forget was Ray Charles was performing. And so he was performing, and we were backstage. We were underneath the stage. And, like, he didn't come for rehearsals. Like, the crazy thing is, like, I got to watch, like, Miles Davis rehearse. I got to watch Billy Joel rehearse. I got to watch all these performers that, you know, everybody would kill to have access to. And we just were sitting with, like, 10 people in the Shrine Auditorium just watching these people rehearse. So he didn't come to rehearsal. But I remember he was performing. I remember this so, like, vividly. We were watching him on the screen, and he was playing, and he was stomping his feet, right? And the cool thing was he was right above us. And so I remember watching the show, and he was stomping his feet, but hearing it right above us. And you could see, like, floorboards, like, moving with dust. I mean, it was like, this is crazy. And I just remember thinking, I remember that moment so vividly, and just knowing – This is a deep moment. I'm not going to forget this, you know? And he was like the Diet Pepsi guy to me at that time. So, like, I was like, okay, he's like this cool dude, but I don't know much about him. And as I got older, the Miles Davis, the Billy Joels, the Ray Charles, those guys became so heavy. So when you say, like, it just feels so genuine, I know what you mean, because I was so lost until I found music like that. And I really feel like they're so grounded in who they are. So when you see and hear what they do, it is genuine, and it takes you over. It's like such a compelling thing. So did it make you want to make music like that? Or were you just like, I want to be influenced by what people are doing in that sound and innovate? Like, tell me what your concept as a player started formulating to be.
Yeah. So it definitely did make me want to play more. And that was what, so that piano teacher of mine was a friend of my dad was in a band with him in high school.
Oh,
he was in high school. So they knew each other way back. He played gigs with my dad. I would see him all the time. And that was part of why my dad sent me to him, because he was totally into all that. He knew all that stuff. And it definitely did, hearing that music definitely did make me want to play it. And it definitely did make me want to play more music than I already was. And particularly that, like, Professor Longhair and, like, Dr. John, I just loved all that, like... Like, all that stuff, Big Chief and all that stuff. It just felt so... I don't know. It just, like, really pulled
happening. Me. It's just so happening.
Right. So it definitely just... Yeah, I can't describe it. It just really propelled me towards.
So tell me, living in New Orleans, which is one of my favorite cities in the country, probably the world, when you were kind of like living there, were you absorbing sounds like crazy, or were you just kind of like, oh my God, this is overwhelming because it's just got so much vibe, you know, so much music in the streets everywhere. Like, tell me, I've only gone there usually for Jazz Fest or New Year's Eve, and it's always been these events. But like, you know, day in and day out, it's not like that. It just can't be. But maybe it is. Like, tell me what that situation or circumstance was for you.
Yeah, totally. So I had always loved it because my mom's an artist and we would go to, and my aunt and cousins have lived there for a super long time. And we would always go to Jazz Fest ever since seventh grade.
Wow.
When I was in seventh grade. And because they have a fine art portion that my mom was in.
Yep.
So my parents and I would go and then we would be in that. And then I was just, you know, my mom was doing the thing and I was just wandering around Jazz Fest like with my dad and also just kind of. Just like wondering, see, like seeing BB King and Stevie Wonder, all these people, just, you know, Jazz Fest. And then also just seeing the city. And that was the thing where I just from the second I was there, I just knew it was like my favorite place ever. And it's not the exact same thing, but that same, it's really visceral thing. I remember it just feels because. I remember the second I stepped off the airplane the first time, it's just like there's a wall of humidity. And the thing I love about that city is that in a way that nowhere else that I've been, there's never a moment when you are in New Orleans where you don't know it. It's not like there are some places where you wake up and for a half second, like, you know, if I'm traveling, there's always that split second when I wake up and I go like, where am I? I feel normally I wake up in my bed, but now I'm some, oh, right. I'm on vacation, wherever. The second you wake up in New Orleans, you go, oh, well, yeah, it's like 90 and 100% humid. Yeah. It's here.
Right.
Yeah. And, but then like the music and everything about it. And so, yeah, I moved there after I graduated with my jazz studies degree to do a lot of, to just gig full time. Right. Because I'd always loved it. And
where would you gig? Would you gig at like, what was it? Howlin' Wolf? Isn't there a venue called the Howlin' Wolf?
There is. I didn't really play there. I didn't play there much. I would play
Frenchman Street. Would you do Frenchman Street?
Oh yeah, lots of Frenchman Street. And then
where it's happening, man.
Oh yeah, and then like a few other places. A place on Bourbon. I had a regular weekly gig. I had a church gig. And I mean I was gigging full time. I lived there for like a year and a half until COVID. And it was more influential on my playing than college was probably. And obviously college had a huge impact just because, you know, I mean, it's like college kind of taught me how to like actually perform on the instrument in general. And then living in New Orleans particularly made it like, okay, you have to actually make it. The thing about there is that there's such an emphasis on making everything feel good.
Right.
And everything has to be for the audience too. And
there's a sound. There's a sound that, I mean, that's one of the things like there's, you know, we did a concert. So one of my favorite acts, one of my favorite bands is the Meters. Oh. And I never got to see them live, you know, and then we got asked to do this big festival and they were one of the headliners on one of the stages. So I got to watch them on stage and I was watching the Meters. I'm like, this sound is New Orleans to me. Like that sound, it's in the water, it's in the food, it's in the people, it's in the vibe. And it's just something that you cannot really create in the same way. You can, but I mean, it will never be born anywhere else. It's like, it's got the ingredient only from there. And that sound is one of the things I'm so drawn to about that city. And you know what I'm talking about. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Iko Iko Iye, that kind of like voodoo magic, funky, kind of soulful, happy, positive, not too fast, not too slow vibe of New Orleans music that always just feels good. And I think that's the one thing that you must have drawn from daily, you know, just in playing and playing with other people. You must have been, there must have been a part of you that was fascinated with the players, because there is something that I know you see in the players that every time I go there, it's just like soul, art, music flows from people like so easily.
Yeah, it's just there's such a dense amount of music happening and such a dense amount of good. There's definitely a lot of like kind of stuff that's not the best, and it's just for some touristy stuff.
Right.
But there's so much just great music. And that's George Porter Jr., the bass player for the Meters, has a regular Monday night at the Maple Leaf Uptown, which is super close to where I lived. Yeah. And
really?
Just him singing and playing. Yeah. Just him singing and playing. And it's just him, a keyboard player, and a drummer. And he doesn't play exactly. He plays way more than he plays on the records. Oh, it's amazing. And that's the other thing. You just get so, and also the scene there is so welcoming and warm to new people. It's just really easy to get to know people out there, and it's super easy to get integrated into the scene. I can't say enough good things about it. And I mean, obviously some of my best friends are still out there and everything.
Where did you live when you were there? Were you right in Jackson Square, or were you kind of like outside a little bit?
No, so I was uptown. So I was really close to Tulane. So, I was far from the French Quarter, which it means 15 or 20 minutes.
Right, right.
So I wasn't on the West Bank. I wasn't across the bridge, but it was the type of thing where, you know, we would complain if we had to drive 20 minutes to get to the Quarter.
coming from Los Angeles, that's pretty heavy.
Exactly. I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in LA, and we'll talk, he's obviously driving a lot, and I've been doing a lot of gigs here the last couple of weeks that are, they'll be like maybe a few hours out in like some small town. And I remember I was calling him, and I was just like, man, this gig's 2 hours away and it only pays this, and it's this long. He's just like, oh, you poor thing.
That's every gig in LA, man, let me tell you. Well, you know, I got a food question for you, because I've got one of my favorite cookbooks is from a Greasy Spoon in New Orleans. And it's a place called Coop's on Decatur. I'm sure you know it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But where would you go for po' boys? Where's your spot?
So I'm kind of biased, but the one of the things I love about New Orleans is that they have these little neighborhood corner stores all throughout the city. And those are the type of things that tourists don't go to as often. It's right. A much more genuinely local thing. And so I lived uptown. I was right by the river in this little neighborhood called Riverside or Black Pearl. And we lived basically across the street. My roommate was this drummer down there. And we lived basically across the street from that one of those. It was like a little mini market. They had like one aisle of groceries.
That's awesome.
And they lived upstairs. And it was this Vietnamese couple that made the best banh mi po' boys.
Oh, my God. What was it called? Do you remember?
Singletons.
I'm texting you next time I'm in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the spots I find that are the best. It took me a little bit. For me, I love Johnny's Po' Boys. It's a pretty big place in Jackson Square. But, I mean, I had to ask because you can never have enough po' boys in that city, and it is the best city to have them. And right. You know what? Part of me sometimes I'm like, every lunch I just want to go check out a different po' boy spot and just have a po' boy for lunch, because – that's heaven for me right there. That's heaven on a platter, you know?
Yeah, so exactly.
You just sang the keys to my heart with banh mi po' boys. So we're definitely going to have to go to Singletons. But let's play something. What do you want to play first?
Yeah, so past year or two, well, not year or two, since COVID started, I've been getting into mixing and production a lot. Because what I figured out is that if you are a musician and you learn how to mix, then you kind of become a producer. You're just like, you find some sounds you like and you're a producer. So these are three songs that I have recently, one of them is finished and will be released in the coming months. And the other two ones are works in progress, getting close. So first one, how about that one, Pal?
All right, here's Pal by Murphy Smith.
When you're on the move and
Slamming funky. Tell me the inspiration behind that and how it came about.
So that's one that I just keep endlessly tweaking, which is all of them. I don't know why I singled that one out.
That's every artist, man. It's like we're never happy with it. Even the I'll listen to a record 15 years later and I'm like, do you think we should remix it? I'm like, no.
You could use a little bit more 2K on the vocal. Dude,
that's every record, and what's going to drive you crazy is the technology changes too. So it's like you make a record 10 years later, 5 years later, 7 years later, 12 years later, 20 years later, you're going to want to use the new technology, but that's not the point. The point is you documented it at that time. I have a great phrase that's going to help you with all this tweaking, okay? I have a very good friend. He is an amazing engineer. He used to be Van Morrison's guitarist. He is one of the coolest cats. We've worked on my last 3 records together, maybe 4. And he's now 80. And he said the coolest thing to me when I was working on a record, he said, you know, the thing is you just have to get it to 98%. He said, there's no such thing as 100. He said, and there's 1,000 ways to get it to 98%. And I was like, oh my God, that just lessens the load and the burden of, is it finished yet? So now I'm like, yo, if it gives me chills, it's at 98%. That's it. And that's what I go by. So it's like, I know if it gives me chills, it'll give somebody else chills. Because if I'm happy with it, somebody else will be happy with it, you know? So I want you to just keep that in your back pocket. Because when you're obsessing over it, just get it to 98%, man. There's 1,000 different ways to get there. Just get it to 98%. That's the best you can do, you know?
I love that. That's great. That's perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, because, well, and also to answer your question, I moved here just 13 months ago, just over a year, and I like it a lot. I love the city. It's awesome, and all the people I met have been great, but it's just generally about moving to a new city and not knowing people, and then, and, like, there's a lyric I've, it ain't your first rodeo, but like, cause like I have done it before in New Orleans, but it's a very different place. Circumstances are different. Time is different.
Climate is a huge part of that, you know?
Right. Cause that's the other thing in New Orleans. People are used to people moving in all the time. It either used to be them or they've met so many people that they're used to it. They're like, oh, you're new to town. I'll show you where all the places are. I'll show you all the stuff.
Right.
And people are obviously nicer and I love it, but I think it's just, people are just not as used to it.
Well, and it's all because of the winter too. And the winter's so long there. It's like it forces people to kind of, you know, do this. It's just a natural thing because when you're in cold climates, it makes you do this. When you're in warm climates, it's like, hey, let's go out and see what's up. You know, that's just the natural kind of dimension of climate, you know? So, but you know what? What's cool about the track is like, you take all the awkwardness out of moving into a new place. It's like,
oh, thank you.
It's fun. It's like, you make it an adventure. The song is like, got this groove. First of all, I want to give you a huge compliment. I love the bass sound. What are you tracking with?
That is, should be around here somewhere. It's a P bass.
I was gonna say it sounds like a P bass. But are you going through any rack? Are you going through any kind of like, you know, what's your chain?
I have been waiting for this question for the last 2 years.
I asked the good ones.
No, I appreciate it. It's so basically I have an Apollo.
Oh, nice. Those are awesome.
And I you know, I used to mic my bass. I used to set up a bass cab and mic it, but I'm just really lazy now. And I've watched so many interviews of mixing engineers and a bunch of them say they just use the DI. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to use it because it's so much faster. I can record it can be 1 a.m. and I can still record. It's super easy. So I just went DI. I think I have the Avalon 737, Apollo plugin that I record through. So it's like a tube preamp and then a plugin. And then I can actually pull up some of the plugins I used if that's of any interest.
No, I love this. This is why I do these interviews because it's like, the reason I started this show, it's like I did so many interviews, TV shows, radio shows, and most people don't know this stuff. And it's like, let's be honest, this is the nerdy stuff that we love, and we love to talk about it because it's the sense of detail. And like, that's what I look for. It's like, I want those details in an interview because let us know what sound you got because there's a great sound you got. And it's like that stuff that people will feed off of. They'll be like, oh, that's such a cool sound. How did he get it? And then it's like, you're just perpetuating good bass sounds that way. You know what I mean? It just makes it a thing.
Totally. So, no, yeah, I'm all about it. So I did, the first bass tip I have for processing bass is almost, I would say 95% of the time, not necessarily in a rock vibe, but for like upright, electric, you can cut 700 hertz.
Huh.
You cut 700 at like a kind of high Q, high thing, just like 2 or 3 dB, and it's just like, it opens it up.
So you think because of that, it just like takes a lot of the body out and gives you more of the punch?
No, so what 700 hertz on bass is it's this nasally honky sound that is like, it's the thing that when you cut it out and then you bring it back in, you're like, oh, I didn't know. I didn't.
Well, it's like unwanted frequencies, but it's more of like the hum or like the, I mean, it kind of is a lot of the body, but it's not the tone. It's not the body of the tone. It's like, it's almost like the residue of the bass tone, right?
Right. Cause that's the thing. It actually, when you cut 700, it brings out the articulation more, but it also brings out the body and the lows more. And man, actually this was kind of an accident, but on this tune, you know, in mixing generally, they say you're supposed to, you know, you want everything to have its place EQ wise.
Right.
So you don't want the kick and the bass to be at 100 hertz unless they're like sidechained or something. So like I was experimenting on this song. I just duplicated the exact same kick sound and the same bass. And I was experimenting with like, okay, well, what if the bass was in the low, was in like the low mids, and the kick was had the subby parts. And I tuned the kick lower for that. And then the exact same recording, same take, same sounds. And then I swapped it. And I like couldn't quite decide. And what I actually ended up doing is on the verse, the kick is higher and the bass is, has the sub. Yeah. And then on the chorus, the bass has more of the low mid stuff and the kick has the sub.
I always find that marriage between the two is one of the hardest things to balance. But yeah. I always go with whatever's the most exciting part gets a little bit more love, because that ebb and flow should happen on a recording and it should have a little bit of movement. And if it becomes static, if it's like always mixed kind of like the same way throughout the song, you're going to tune out. Your ear is not perking up to what's interesting. So, but I always find it to be super fascinating. And, you know, it's like one of those things where you can always have the bass louder than the kick. And then you can always have the kick louder than the bass. But if you kind of interchange them like you're doing, you're kind of solving that problem of if it's interesting to listen to. You know what I mean? So it's,
yeah.
I love that you're doing that. I wanted to ask you, do you layer your kicks too? Is it more than one kick? Do you have different samples that you add? Is it real drums? Is it, it sounds like synthetic drums, but you tell me, did you add kind of real drums to it? Did you kind of mix and match?
Yeah, totally. So oftentimes, honestly, this is a, it's definitely not a demo, but this is not its final form. I would say this is like 80% there. I'm going to have a friend. That's me playing guitars. And I do not play guitar, period. And this is me like recording my dad's Strat on his amp. And I tried to do it as best as I could. But there's a killing guitar player, a friend of mine in New Orleans. And I texted him yesterday. I was just like, man, I'm going to have you record guitar in this. I think you can do it better than I can. There, you would do it better. And like, so I'm going to have him do that. But to answer your question, normally I do use layers. For this one, I only have the one kick sound, and it's a sample from Splice. But I might end up layering them in if I need to.
Well, Murphy, we have time for one more song. What do you want to play us next?
We'll have a good time.
Here's We'll Have a Good Time at Murphy Smith.
Of this I am sure. I'm so glad you're in my life. Of our love I'll never bore. It's just getting to be with you removes any pain. It is gone when you arrive, never to return again. Oh, I need you more than ever, and I want you in my life. Have a good time. The love that you and I share is a most special thing. And I promise you my heart to you I'll always bring. Whoa, I need you more than ever. Have a good time. Oh, 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 at times I'll make you worry about things from this to that. Sometimes just if I see, don't come out right. To do, just think of our love and it'll
Real quick, shout out to Allie Faves. She just texted me that she was playing on that.
Yes.
Dude, this is like a Steely Dan. I mean, you know what? I got to tell you, between you and Allie, I'm like relieved that the new generation of music, the next generation of music, is just making kick-ass music. It's something I always worry about because it just doesn't always happen when you see what's happening in pop music right now. It's like, thank God for you guys. I hope you always play music together and always keep making music because you guys are blessings. Murphy, I'm going to have you on the show again, but for now, where can people find you? Where can people find you online? How can they find your music?
Instagram is my main thing. It's Murphy Smith, MURPHYSMITH .bass, BASS, Murphy Smith .bass. I'm also on TikTok under the same thing. Yeah, keep on the lookout because that song you just heard will be coming out after I actually get a cover for it.
Well, I hope you never stop making music. I hope you never stop producing. You're on the right path. I mean, just hearing the music and the playing and the feel, it's all there, man. So please keep on keeping on. And we're going to have to work on music together. It's just you, me, and Allie are going to have to do a track together. And I'm just putting it out there. I know she's listening. So we're going to make a track. We're going to make a track. And we'll get something together. It's going to be awesome. All right? That's
good. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Murphy, you're a great cat. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Murphy, check out his music on Instagram. We'll have you guys back for sure. Murphy, we're going to have you back for sure. And we hope you guys will tune in next week. We'll see you next week. Peace and love. Thanks, Murphy, for being a great cat. Cheers.
Day.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.